So hello and welcome to our podcast. I'm Susan McNaughton, the Communications Director for the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections. As our listeners may know, over the past few months, we've experienced many instances where employees and inmates have been sickened and sent to medical facilities for treatment following some sort of contact with drugs or chemicals. Since then, and following a 14-day lockdown of our entire prison system, our agency has implemented a number of policy and procedural changes to eliminate drugs from entering our prisons. Listeners can read about all of those changes in the newsroom section of our website at www.cor.pa.gov. What we want to do today is educate our listeners about why these changes were needed. Essentially, what happened that got us to this point. So today we're having a candid discussion about how drugs enter our state prisons with Major William Nicklow, who is from the DOC's Bureau of Investigations and Intelligence, and SCI Cole Township's Captain George Burns. Gentlemen, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Before we get into the nitty-gritty of this discussion, though, would each of you please provide our listeners with a brief overview of your DOC employment, starting with Major Nicklow?
My name is Major Nicklow. I'm the current major for the Bureau of Investigations and Intelligence. I oversee the department's intelligence gathering network, our analytical operation, and our drug interdiction unit.
Captain George Burns from SCI Cole Township. I'm the intelligence gathering captain at Cole Township. I oversee the whole operation of our security office at the facility.
Okay, thank you. So let's get started and talk about how people attempt or have in the past attempted to smuggle drugs into our prisons. Let's start in the visiting room. Tell us about the different ways. I've heard things about people hiding things in baby's diapers. Can you be candid? Give us some information about how people have tried to smuggle drugs in through visiting rooms.
For the longest time, our visiting room was probably the biggest access point for drugs into our facilities. Drugs have come in, as you stated, believe it or not, people would use their children to smuggle drugs in, whether it be in a diaper, inside their clothing, things like that. They also hide them on their person. We have taken steps in the past to rectify some of that with the ion scanners, and they realized that, so then it got to the point where they hid them in even more personal areas to not be detected with the ion scan. Some of the ways they delivered them, you know, through kisses, through placing it on trays with food, mm-hmm. Placing it in the inmate bathroom, and having another visitor go get it. You know, they use what we call mules. One person sets it up, his visitor may bring it in, they place it in the bathroom, then another inmate's visitor goes in the bathroom and gets it and brings it out, because maybe they think we're not watching that one in particular person, trying to shake things up a little bit.
So it's masters definitely well coordinated on the outside.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Masters of distraction.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Wow. And what kind of drugs are we talking about through the visiting room?
Typically, you know, the largest drug that we're seeing right now, and even pre-lockdown, through the visiting room is probably Suboxone. Mm-hmm. Buprenorphine, it's an opioid. It comes in a small strip, very similar to the Listerine strips.
The breath strips,
mm-hmm. Right. Very easy to conceal, and that's why that was one of the top drugs, because in a jailhouse setting, it's not only easy to introduce relatively, but it's also easy to distribute throughout the facility and conceal inside the facility and pass it along. So that's why that's an ideal drug, not necessarily for the effects of the high from the drug, but because of the way that the drug is easily concealed and distributed throughout the facility.
So I wanted to touch on a couple of things, the ion scanners. So I know we're getting all new ion scanners, but what were some of the issues? We get a lot of complaints from people that email our website or that email us that the ion scanners just don't work, and that they can detect things like if you eat, you know, a poppy seed muffin, you're going to test positive. Is that true?
The itemizers are trace detection systems. So the way that they are designed is to really detect if somebody has had contact, whether it's incidental contact or actual contact with a substance. And you can get a varying degree of a positive. So there's a threshold for a positive, and you can get a really, really high positive or a lower end positive. So if somebody's touching money, for example, a lot of people say that, you know, there's you know, drug traces of drugs on money, and I touch it and I get this incidental contact. I wasn't really using drugs or had any contact with drugs, but because I was touching another substance that had came into contact with drugs, money probably being the most predominant one, I test positive when I go through the ion scan. The reality is the way that the thresholds are set up and then we have it set up, you have to be handling those drugs and touching those drugs, really. And that's why we give the opportunity for you to go wash your hands if there is some incidental trace contact, and then come back.
So when the officer is doing the ion scan and the test comes back for the visitor as positive, is it arranged? Like, you know, does it number it like from 1 to 10? And so the officer sees, oh, it's only on scale 2?
At a certain point on the machine, it'll be positive no matter how much.
Right.
You're going to get a positive or not positive. Now, if there were, if you got more of a trace of the drugs, it's going to be higher, but we don't consider it to be positive until it meets a certain threshold.
Okay.
Right.
And regardless of anything over that, it's still a positive.
Okay.
If it's under that, then it's negative. And you know, and this is why we let them, not only do we let them wash their hands and, you know, take off outer garments and all that, we search different areas the second time to reaffirm the positive. You know,
okay,
you can't just say it's incidental. It's in more than one place.
Some people are saying that they actually are like putting their clothes in a Ziploc type of baggie, and they change into it right before they get to the institution so that they know that there's no way that their clothes would have had any contact with drugs.
That's a good way to try to smuggle drugs in. That'd be a great way for people to do it.
Really?
They like to package things and do things ahead of time so that there is no trace and so that there is no odor in case there's a canine dog. So if you see somebody doing that,
It raises a red flag,
right.
Interesting.
It raises a red flag.
They're trying to sanitize some material that they're trying to introduce into.
Absolutely.
To covertly, you know.
So we're getting new ion scanners, and they're going to be better? Are they?
So the older system that we have was through a manufacturer called Smith Detection, and they're great, the ion scanners. I mean, we had no problem with them. They've been in place for about 20 years. But they're 20-year-old technology.
Mm-hmm.
So we're upgrading that technology.
Right.
So the new system is originally, and there were five of them in place before pre-lockdown. We were already moving in the direction of upgrading our antiquated technology. They were manufactured by Sans Morpho at that time. They were bought out by a company called Rapiscan. And in the corrections environment, those are both very well-known manufacturers. They're much more advanced. They're easier to maintain. Their catalog is much more robust, meaning that they can detect a lot more substances. We can kind of expand our substance range of detection out virtually indefinitely. So as many substances as we want to enter into those systems. The other nice thing about it is all of our facilities will have the same technology in place, and we'll be able to remotely access those devices from a centralized location to do troubleshooting, calibrations, and things like that to make sure that they're online as much as possible and that they're operating at the optimal level that we want them to operate at.
And you could probably take a peek at the system and see if there's something trending
well as tracking. They can do that. Absolutely.
Wow.
So if we are getting an area where we're getting a lot of false positives, or we think that we're getting a lot of false positives, or we're starting to get a lot of complaints from visitors, we can in real time jump in there, take a look at it, adjust some settings if we need to, and do that in real time.
Excellent.
So that's going to address a lot of those concerns.
That's great. Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about vending machines, because a lot of people don't understand why this 90-day kind of period that we're in, we've decided no vending machines. People don't understand. First of all, some people don't understand why we even provide vending machines, but what's the big deal with vending machines? How are individuals able to smuggle drugs?
Food is the number one, food and drink, they're the number one way that they're transplanting the drugs from the person that brought them into the facility to the inmate.
So step us through it. You're a visitor.
You go to the bathroom and retrieve your drugs, or you have them in a pocket or something accessible, in a waistband. You go up, you make the food, you come back to your seat, watch when no one's looking, or you think no one's looking. You retrieve them and place them on the plate with the food.
And then
the inmate picks it up with some food, puts it in his mouth, takes a drink, swallows the contraband.
Now it's inside their body. So even when we do a strip search, as they're coming back into the secure perimeter, it's not visible. It's in their body. A few days later or a day later, they pass it and retrieve the drugs.
And, I mean, sometimes they don't even wait that long.
Yeah, right.
The trend now is the short visits, the people that only come in for an hour, hour and a half. They hurry up. They get the drugs passed to the inmate. He swallows them. He ingests them. They end their visit. He goes back to his cell and he throws them up. He doesn't wait for them to pass all the way through his system. That way, he doesn't have to wait, and it's quicker and easier if he just throws them up then.
Okay, so tell me also about...
It's a nasty business.
Fun pictures were painted today, right?
I'm trying not to get too graphic, but it's a nasty business.
Yeah, they pack them in a latex balloon or a rubber balloon or a rubber glove fingertip, a condom, or something like that, you know, to maintain the integrity of the drug.
Yeah. Right.
Okay, so in the visiting room, talk about like how the inmate and the family member or visitor... how they greet each other. What kind of kissing is allowed? Is kissing allowed?
Yeah, kissing's allowed. There are a lot of...
Because drugs can be passed
embrace
that way.
And a kiss at the beginning and one again at the end.
Okay. And how many officers are usually in a visiting room?
That would be facility dependent. Okay. I mean, each facility is built a little different.
Physical plan.
I'm from a prototypical institution. And until these new practices started, we only had one person, one officer in the visiting room.
Wow.
So very easily, while he's processing visitors in or out, he's distracted for a minute. Can they have another kiss? Sure. And that's how drugs get passed. Or can they put them on a plate of food while he's got his head down? Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
This is why we've augmented it with cameras, additional staff now. You know, so we're trying to eliminate those things.
Right.
Like we said, masters of distraction. You know, somebody come up, hey, ask a question while something else is going on behind it. You know, a lot of these things are calculated, and they may seem very, very innocent, but they're calculated in an effort to introduce the contraband into the facility.
So John and Joe may decide to have visits on the same day.
So exactly.
John's going to have the drugs, Joe's going to be the
So the major and I, we know it, and we set it up with our visitors, right? And he knows that... I'm going to go up and distract the officer by giving him my picture tickets and asking a question. And meanwhile, while I'm doing that and distracting him, he gets the drugs from his visitor, or vice versa.
Okay, so part of the changes that we're making is that there's going to be a body scanner in place at every facility. And so the way I understand it is that it will be inside the institution, and once the inmate is done with the visit, the inmate will go through... So tell me how that works and what kind of things can be detected and where on the body.
Well, Cap, you want to talk about that? I mean, you had a body scanner was in place at your facility, and now you've got some extensive experience with that.
We piloted a body scanner for 120 days. In that 120 days, almost 5,000 scans, almost 49, I think it was the actual number, was 49 actual positive results. The body scanners are nice. They can detect not only things that were ingested, but if it's on the outside in between your clothing and skin, it'll see it. So they're multi-purpose. You can manipulate the image to see what's on the outside as well as what has been ingested, if there was anything ingested.
So it's kind of similar to an airport scanner that you might go through?
Along those lines, the same lines. Our particular... body scanner, like the airport ones, you stand in it and the machine moves.
Right.
On these, you don't. You actually stand on, they call it a carriage, and you just stand still and the carriage moves you through it.
Oh, okay.
And then the image is produced.
Okay.
They're very effective. I mean, we found drugs with them. We found weapons with them. You know, anything that they're concealing in or on their body can be detected.
So anything that a visitor might pass to the visit, through the visit, should be captured by the body scanner.
Well, it depends.
Okay.
A lot of the balloons that had the K2 in it or had marijuana in it, things like that, those are easy to see. Those are very easy to see.
The
biggest thing with the body scanner is it's a tool. It's a very good tool, but it's a tool that's only as good as the operator. So the better our operators are trained, the better the machine's going to work for us.
Okay.
So as we implement these across all of our facilities, a big component to that is going to be ensuring that the staff that are going to be operating these body scanners are very thoroughly trained. And they're going to get really good at it. just from the use. They're going to be very, very good at it. I know in the time, you can speak for that at Cole Township.
I saw that with our staff. When we first started using it, you know, it was taking them 2-3 minutes to look at the scan and make a decision. And the more they used it, mm-hmm. you can really cut that time down. They look at the scan, and it's obvious. It jumps out at them once they get used to how to read the scan. As long as that, you know, we teach them to look at the scan top to bottom, divide the body in half. Things are supposed to look symmetrical. And as you work your way down from the head down, things will just jump out at you if they're not supposed to be there.
That is amazing. Amazing technology.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
That's exciting. So let's talk a little bit more about the old way of doing business, with how people would try to get drugs in through the mail. Spraying things on paper. Talk about that.
Yeah. So, you know, with the advent of the synthetic cannabinoids, the liquid cannabinoids and the liquid opioids and the liquid methamphetamines, we were faced with an unprecedented issue that we really didn't have to deal with before. Before, historically, you know, the synthetic cannabinoids would come in and they would spray it on some plant material and they would ingest it very similar to the traditional way that you smoke marijuana on the street. But what we were seeing was they could take a piece of paper, a very normal looking piece of paper, and they were able to spray it with a liquid and then send it in through the mail, and it looked just like a regular piece of mail, regular piece of paper, regular handwritten note from somebody's mother. And they would get it in, the inmate would know what it was, they would know which piece of paper it was, and they were able to break it down and distribute it throughout the facility and ingest it and get high. They were going for, in some cases, $1,700 for a sheet of paper, right. You know, in the supply chain,
yep.
This whole process inside of our facility. So it was a very lucrative business. The problem with it was, historically, you had to be well-connected to really introduce drugs into a facility. You were typically part of a security threat group or gang. And you had connections out on the street, you had connections inside, you had an entire supply chain, right,
mm-hmm.
so to speak. With these synthetic cannabinoids, you could literally buy these saturated pieces of paper off the internet, have them sent in. So anybody could be a player in the game at that point. One of the other methods that was very disturbing was they were able to take an ink cartridge, and they could take the ink out of the ink cartridge, put some kind of thinning agent in the ink, nail polish, mineral spirits, some type of paint thinner, and then put the synthetic cannabinoid or the synthetic methamphetamine or whatever into the ink cartridge and literally print a piece of paper. And it would look like a typed piece of paper. And it was incredibly hard to detect, virtually impossible to detect. And it was able to be issued and administered into the facility that way through the mail.
Wow.
So we were faced with a situation where the introduction methods were very, very difficult to detect. And they were coming in at such a high volume, even when we did catch it, we were only catching pieces
portion.
Of it.
Yeah, portion a small of it. Portion.
So a lot of it was going through. So it was kind of this shotgun effect, you know? You might stop a few, but a lot of them were getting through. And that's what they were doing. It was so cheap for them to do it, and the return on investment was so high for the cost of it inside that it became a real
threat. And our facilities are like small communities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if one guy has success doing it, and he tells another guy, and then that guy has success, and then both of them tell somebody. Now you got four, then eight, then six. So that's how we were getting flooded. One guy found out how to do it. Mm-hmm. He tells somebody else, and then it spreads like wildfire, just like a rumor in a community or something. You know, the neighbor down the street has a house. Everybody knows it within 15 minutes. Well, that's how a jail operates. So as soon as they found one way where we were having difficulty finding it, they pounced on it and flooded our institutions with it.
Yeah. Talking about finding a way, I saw on YouTube there's several videos that show how to hide these, you know, the strips
mm-hmm.
in greeting cards.
Absolutely.
How to take it apart.
Absolutely.
And just amazing.
There are how-to videos out there on how to saturate paper with liquid K2.
Yeah.
It's out there. It's on the internet.
So talk to us about how drugs are smuggled in through books.
You know, historically, one of the ways was, you know, they would go purchase a book at a big box bookstore, and they would take it home. They would saturate the pages, similar to what they were doing with the paper in the mail.
Mm-hmm.
Then they would take it back to the bookstore and act like they were just buying it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they would bring this book back. They would pay for it again, second time.
Okay.
Take it up to the front and say, hey, I'm just buying this book, and I need you to send it to SCI wherever. and then they would ship it to the facility, and it would look like it came from the original source from the vendor, and it would get shipped in, but it had already been manipulated.
And they would do that even with Suboxone. Mm-hmm. Take the book home, you know, get the Suboxone down in the mm-hmm. binding.
Right.
They would actually open the book, cut it open, fill the binding full of Suboxone, 50, 100 strips, whatever, glue it back up. It looked perfectly fine. So, and like you said, take it back to the store and rebuy the book just like it was brand new and have the vendor ship it to us.
Wow.
So it looked like it was an original source.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So now we obviously have some changes in our policies and procedures where all of the original mail is going down to a third-party vendor, and they mm-hmm. scan it, and the scanned files are sent to the appropriate mailrooms where they're printed right. off. And so there's technically really no way for an inmate to get original mail with drugs on it, correct?
It eliminates it through that kind of mail.
Right.
Yeah. So that was a huge avenue. That was probably the largest pathway for introduction at pre-lockdown, leading up to the DOC locking down our facilities and really taking a look, systematic look at all of these processes that we had in place. The mail was probably the number one introduction method by volume.
By far.
And we kind of cut that off. We mm-hmm. cut that avenue off by implementing, going with smart communications with the vendor and having those copies of the mail. The body scanners will effectively mitigate the issues with the visiting room,
right?
Or any inmate coming from the outside, whether they're an outside worker, whether it's somebody coming back from court, ATA, whether it's right. a parole violator coming back in, they can all be processed through right. that body scanner as a kind of a point of entry back into our secure perimeter.
Great.
So we're gonna attack those areas that way.
And books are going to go to a central processing area.
Books are going to go to a central processing
yes,
area.
The secure processing center.
Okay.
They're going to be searched and checked for contraband and then mailed to the facilities to be delivered.
Great.
Which eliminates the book aspect. You're starting with books and magazines.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it sounds like we've really are clamping down on the different ways that we see drugs coming into the system.
Right.
We are.
We eliminated colored envelopes a while ago, mm-hmm. so we don't even have to worry about that now because the mail's not even coming straight
right.
to the institutions.
Right, in legal mail, we're doing photocopies of the legal mail now in the inmate's presence. We get the legal mail, we open it up, we copy the legal mail, and the inmate gets the exact copy of whatever privilege correspondence was sent in. And then the original privilege correspondence is sealed with evidence tape, and it's placed in a secure container.
Great.
In the inmate's presence.
Okay. Well, it sounds like we're making some great strides, and we're going to get better control over this. We've seen the number of staff and inmate exposures. Those incidents actually have been coming down,
mm-hmm.
right? So
right.
I think we're moving in the right direction, but everybody's always trying to beat the system, right? And so that's you, the two of you, your job.
And that's the thing with the mouse and the mousetrap.
Yeah.
You know, you get a better mousetrap, the mouse becomes smarter, you got to build a better mousetrap.
Right.
So it's going to mitigate it, but it'll most definitely evolve,
right.
you know.
But that's kind of the nature of corrections, isn't it?
It is the nature of corrections. And, you know, we're fortunate enough that we have an administration that really understands intelligence-led corrections, and that the intelligence that we get, that information that we're constantly monitoring, we're constantly getting, collecting information, analyzing that information, and turning it into intelligence to kind of inform our executive staff to make good decisions, influence policies. That's what's important, and that's what's going to be continuing to be important down the road. Just like you said, it's an evolving, mm-hmm. it's an evolving animal,
and we're being proactive with the tools to try to help us
right.
to find the new avenue. You know, with the body scanners, the ion scanners, so we keep upgrading the tools, building the better mousetrap, so that we can try to stay ahead of the game and try to mitigate it.
And this is all about safety.
It's all about safety.
It's all about safety, trying to keep our prison safe, because when drugs are in our prisons, it's a dangerous environment.
Yeah, you know, the drugs, especially with the synthetic cannabinoids are coming in. You know, I think that I really think that a lot of the inmates thought that it was a safe drug. And the reality is, some of these compounds that we were getting in, you know, they had the active ingredients for Raid, you know, pesticides, active ingredients in Roundup or insecticides. So these were poisons, toxic chemicals
right.
that they were putting in their body, and they didn't know what they were mm-hmm. ingesting. And the results of that were, you know, they would get violent, they would black out and be incoherent, they wouldn't even remember sometimes after being high. Some of these highs would last 72 hours.
Oh my goodness. Now, we also are playing information on the inmate TV channel, right, to educate them about just what you're saying.
Correct.
You know, you don't know what you're putting in your body,
right.
Inmate. It could be,
right.
It could kill you.
Mm-hmm.
And not just the inmate that's doing the drug. I mean, there are health hazards for him, but drugs in our facilities are a huge security concern,
mm-hmm.
because now you're involving money. Something you have to pay for it somehow. So now we're having assaults because of drug debt and things like that. So if we can get the big chunk of the drugs out of the jail, you'll see less assaults. It'll be a way safer environment because the debt will be down. If you don't have it to pay for, there is no debt.
Yeah.
Things like that. So it's not just, it is, I mean, a big concern is their health and safety. The safety part comes in with the debt and the assaults.
Right. And our staff being exposed to these chemicals that are in there, our staff responding to these fights,
right.
and this violence and them being incidentally injured and that. So, you know, it's not something we can take lightly, and it's not something we do take lightly. It's something we take very, very seriously and take all of those things into account.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
We've had a lot of, last couple months have been kind of crazy, and I really wanted to be able to explain to our listeners what it's all about. It's all about safety.
Yeah.
Thank
yes,
you.
Ma'am.
Thank you.